You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Not a one, stored for White House offices, one or more of them, from January 03 to August 2005. The total number of days in which an office had no recorded emails was more than 1,000, more than 3 years. And what I was trying to understand from your conversation with Bob that we had just a few minutes ago is how much effort does it take to not store these emails?
To not store it?
Yeah, in other words, I know that, for example, I get email all the time. Frankly, I usually store it right there on my computer. Sometimes I store it on the server.
Yes.
And then sometimes I delete it. You know, I delete a lot of spam. But I know that secretly in the computer gremlins, of which I don't claim to understand, I leave that to experts like you, that these things are actually backed up and stored, I think, every which way to Sunday. My question for you is, how much work does it take to not have a single email stored, not a single one, in a White House office for more than 3 years?
Well, what that would take, Mark, is a deliberate violation of the law and a deliberate either throwing out the door, the tape backup system, or deliberately turning it off, or deliberately not ordering tapes to insert into it so that it has a fresh tape to use every evening. Certainly the federal government can afford a blank tape for every evening. Normally servers back up at night when the system is at low usage, and so that you have a full image of all the email transactions that happen every day. Now, what you're talking about is deleting mail off your own machine. The way this works is a system administrator or someone who would be in charge of the computer system would tell you, as an individual user, when you're hired, normally it's what I say to people, I am not responsible in any way for data that you store on your own local computer. If you delete your emails, that's fine. If your machine crashes and you lose files you're storing on your local machine, that's fine. But I am only responsible for backing up the server. The system administrator is really only responsible for keeping the data on the server. So this comes down to the individual system administrator who is being paid not to back up the system. In other words, the effort required is just tell them no.
Well, here's what I'm trying to understand. I mean, when I worked for a law firm, I was a trial lawyer for a number of years in California, and when I worked there, I knew, and this is back in the 90s, now I'm showing my age, but back in the 90s, before any of us really understood email, and yet we were all told it doesn't really matter what we do on our computers because there's a record of it anyway. And they would do backup tapes, and I didn't really understand it. They'd have these big, big things. I mean, how much of a record is there of our emails that we send, just us, and then we'll talk about the White House, which is supposedly more secure?
Email is transactional. In other words, email is stored in a huge database. Everyone's email is together in one huge database on a server. And typically, you know, when a user logs in, the database is pulling only their data. So you're only responsible for backing up one file from a server, which is a massive file, and it is a database file. And because it's transaction-based, every piece of email that came through that day is backed up, regardless of whether you deleted it or not, from your
everything,
local mail.
All that
everything,
spam, all that Viagra stuff I get.
All
not that,
that
I ordered it, folks.
All that stuff is backed up.
Trillions of pieces of data, or trillions is probably way too small. Quadrillion.
When you add in the attachments, yes. Well, the attachments boost that score considerably.
And so, I don't know how much you know about the Clinton archiving system, but can you tell us what it would take to undo that system?
Literally, not plugging in the backup tape every evening. The staff may not have the backup tapes because nobody ordered them, or disconnecting the backup is normally a separate box from the main server. I mean, you can have an integrated built-in tape drive for backing up, but that's not really industrial strength. Normally, it is a separate device intended to do backup, and you could unplug it and throw it away. It just means not doing something. There's no effort. It means just not doing something. Turning
but
it
how
off,
rare
it
is it for an ordinary corporation? Not
unheard of. Unheard of. The assistant administrator would go out the door immediately. If there were a database failure, a hard drive failure, a storage failure on your main email server, that would mean every corporate email from everyone from, if we're talking about Microsoft, everyone from Bill Gates down to the janitor is gone. And as you all know, and as we all know, we rely on our email and the history. We go back, we look up addresses, we look at what we said to people. We all keep our emails on our local machines. So it's unheard of. It's incompetence of a level that I would have a hard time finding words to express to you.
Someone would be fired
immediately, yes. And the only possible way it could happen to any system administrator who had ever reached the level of administrating a system in the White House, the only way it could possibly be happening is for them to be ordered not to back it up.
That's what I figured. You know, I gave a speech a year back, and there was an argument in the audience because about half the people I talked to thought the Bush administration was just incredibly incompetent, and the other half thought they were incredibly evil and malevolent. And there was this battle, really, between two groups of well-meaning people, and half were saying, no, he's just incredibly incompetent, like talking about Katrina. And I said, no, he's evil, he's malevolent. And finally I said, please, can't we all get along? He can be both. And there's a picture
point,
of me
Mark.
in this newspaper in Denver, Colorado, and I have my hands up on both sides. He can be both.
Interesting. I normally fall on the evil and malevolent side of that fence, although I sometimes straddle it and see the incompetence too, but I'm pretty much sold on evil and malevolent.
We have to choose. We do not have to choose. We can have both. And I think there's a lot of both in this administration. But as the emails are concerned, I think you're right. It's too difficult to negligently do this. It's too difficult to negligently lose 3 years of emails. You have to work at it.
Exactly. You have to work at it. You have to remove, assuming that the system administrator was backing it up at some point during the, you have to remove all those old tapes and discard them. In fact, Mark, there was a story at one point they were using they only had one tape. And so every night they would back up, they would erase the previous days and back up again on the same tape. Another is if the federal government couldn't afford blank tapes.
They could afford a bridge to nowhere in Alaska. They could afford, $6 billion in walking around money. In Iraq, which requires you can't walk around with three. You need three 18-wheel trucks, you know, to carry around that kind of cash. Go ahead.
And generally, every system administrator knows this. There's generally what's called good practice for involving your backups, and that means to keep your backups off site. Should the building all burn down and everything go poof, I assume the White House though would have a fireproof safe or some other method of. But you want to keep your backups off-site. I mean, all of this is documented. This is like first-grade stuff for a systems administrator. Everybody knows the backups are gold. Far more valuable than the computers. The backup is the data. Far
Darth
more valuable
Cheney,
than the
and I use those words purposely. Darth Cheney has a man-sized safe in his office. Maybe there's a body buried in there, or maybe it just happens to be the servers for a number of White House emails.
Nothing would surprise me. It's incompetence and criminal activity beyond your wildest dreams.
Food for thought. While you're on with me, Peter, I want to switch topics to another issue I know you care about. Because, hey, you know, you and I don't get to talk a whole bunch, just you and me. We were talking in the last hour about some of the ways that liberal groups sabotage other liberal groups. And, we just got to lay it all out. I mean, I'm not just going to criticize Republicans. I'm going to criticize some of our friends because I was thinking about what happened to me, it's 8 to 9 years ago now when I lived in California, because it typifies a syndrome that I'm not the first to call it, but it's the not invented here syndrome. And I think all of us may not even realize that you've come across this in the workplace, the not invented here syndrome.
I certainly have, yes. I give you examples, yes.
Yeah, well you can. I mean, the obviously it's you're working for the boss and you have this great idea for the boss. But it's not invented here. It wasn't the boss's idea. So even though it's a great idea, the boss has to get rid of it because, heck,
yes,
you know, it
yes.
was.
In
it
fact,
wasn't
I was working with an electronics company in Seattle many years ago, and they were so proprietary and so sold on not invented here, they even refused to buy screws, for crying out loud, screws to hold the cabinets together from the types of electronics they built. Because the screws were, in other words, they had their own sheet metal plant to make their own screws. Because damn it, we made them, and they're done right. It just
let me give you an example of political not invented here, and this is a true story, and I'm going to name names because heck, these are the kind of things that are searing into the brain. As I said, 2 days ago, and also in the last hour, there's something about betrayal that I find far more offensive and than even evil. And this has to do with gay rights, and that's why I thought you might be interested, Peter. It has to do with California's first civil unions bill. I'm proud to say, and very few people know this, but I'll toot my own horn here. I wrote California's first civil unions bill. This was right after the Vermont ruling to allow.
Mark.
I did.
I had no idea. That's priceless. And you're with the horn. I had no idea.
I've done all kinds of strange things in my life. We can talk about my Nazi hunting skills on another day. I've done that too. But I did. That was the Office of Special Investigations, 1991. Anyway, but back to California's first civil unions bill. We had Vermont had just passed its bill, and I was talking with a friend of mine who was another gay lawyer in California. And we discussed the fact that California had just passed Proposition 22, which was a proposition that banned the right of gay people to marry. It was a pretty vicious bill, and I don't even know that it would pass again today, but in the heady days after Vermont, there was a majority that was against it. But we talked about the fact that we felt that most straight people weren't against gay people having equal rights. They were just against calling it marriage because people think of marriage as a religious institution rather than a political institution.
And
so we
indeed
thought,
they do.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it is a religious institution as well as being a political institution. The problem is the same word is used for both religious marriage and for the civil right of marriage, and it's a problem using the same word. So we said, look, we'll take separate but equal if we have to. That's much better than non-equal. And I, with my friend, I wrote a law, and the law, actually, I went through the entire California Family Code, and I am a California lawyer, so I did know my way through it, and I went through the entire California Probate Code and all of California law, and the bill, it was a very elegant bill, if I do say so myself, it was less than 10 pages, and all I did, really, was I set up a parallel system of civil unions that gave gay people exactly the same rights as straight people. In fact, I said straight people could join in the civil unions. Well, because there were some straight people who felt that if gay people couldn't get married, they didn't want to get married. So fine, they can join a civil union as well. They don't need to have it blessed by a priest. They can just go to a judge, just like a gay couple. Any two consenting adults not related by blood could go and get this civil union. And a civil union had all the rights of marriage. Now, this wasn't where you took, and there's some 1,600 marital rights, about 1,000 under state law, about 600 under federal law. This bill didn't presume to go right by right by right and to say you have this right and that right and so forth. It simply said that we're basically wherever you have a marital right in the California Code, that will include a civil union right. And it even included, I'm very proud of this, the first bill in the whole United States of America to give gay people all the rights of marriage, including under federal law, because my bill said very simply that a civil union shall be treated as a marriage for purposes of federal law. See, federal law, it's a weird mixture, marriage, because federal law gives you all these benefits if you're married, Social Security and rights and all kinds of things. Ding, ding. And so it gives you all those rights, and but what it does is it bases it on the state definition of marriage. So in other words, the federal government doesn't define marriage, the states do. But whether you get a right under federal law depends on whether you're married under state law. Which is why I think that it would be illegal for them to refuse Massachusetts couples. and we can get to that. But in any case, this was before Massachusetts. And so I wrote the first law in the country, the bill, that would give full and equal rights, state and federal, to gay couples. I was very proud of it. At the time, we were leading protests. We would go into marriage licensing bureaus and line up all these gay couples and have them be refused and bring the cameras out on Valentine's Day. It was a fun little thing we did. Marriage Equality California is what we called it. It's grown some. But I'm getting off topic. The point of my what I'm saying here and how this all relates back to Not Invented Here is I helped elect, because I know that it's not just a matter of convincing a politician to do the right thing. If you're with that politician from the beginning, you have a lot better chance of getting something done. So I helped elect an assemblyman by the name of Paul Koretz in the district in California that includes West Hollywood, which is the first majority gay city in the country. San Francisco is about a third gay. West Hollywood is the majority. And it's separated from the unincorporated parts of Los Angeles County to be a majority gay city. And Paul Koretz represented West Hollywood, and he is a straight man, but a very, very good believer in full and equal rights for everyone, including gay people. And I helped Paul Koretz get elected. I helped him in the primary against the fellow Democrat. I helped him in the general. I sat next to him as we called people and got him to the polls. He was a big, big fan of mine. I'm a big fan of his. And he agreed to introduce my civil unions bill. And I guess I should give credit to the co-author, Jim Toledano. It wasn't just mine. He and I wrote the bill together. So we have this bill, just two gay lawyers in Los Angeles write a bill. Now, you know, we're pretty sophisticated lawyers. And Paul Koretz introduces it. And you can go back and look on the record, and you will see our civil unions bill was introduced in California. But
I had no idea.
There's something we did wrong. We didn't inform the Lambda Legal Defense Fund. The Lambda Legal Defense Fund is the gay legal civil rights group. They are patterned after the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, that great organization run by Thurgood Marshall that brought us Brown versus Board of Education. And the Lambda Legal Defense Fund, generally, at least so I had supposed up to that point, did good things. They helped gay rights. They are the ones who were brought in Lawrence v. Texas and Browers v. Hardwick and all these Supreme Court decisions that are virulently anti-gay. Well,
yeah,
Lambda,
they were just endorsed and given a large gift, too, by the Microsoft employee who passed away.
I'm sure they were. And that will make them very happy. Because what Lambda cares about more than anything else, more than gay rights, is money. And how do I know this? Very simple. Lambda insisted to Paul Koretz that he withdraw the bill that I and Jim Toledano wrote and substitute it with their own. Their bill, which instead of giving gay people the 1,600 equal rights of marriage that straight people got, gave them 8 domestic partner benefits. Visitation, hospital, a few other things. 8.
Yes.
Not 1,600, not a tenth of 1,600, not 1% of 1,600, but half of 1% of 1,600. 8 rights. And Lambda said, we don't think we can get full equality, so we want you to withdraw the bill. At which point Paul Koretz said, quite rightly, look, why don't we try Mark's bill? This Mark Levine, Jim Toledano's bill, we'll try to get full equality. If we meet resistance in the legislature, then I'm sure we can then water it down and get as much as we can. Because Paul Koretz, like me, is a realist. He understands that you can't always get everything you want, and better to get half a loaf than no loaf. I'm all for that. I understood that, so did Paul. And Lambda said no. They said no. You must start with our bill only. Because the other one is too far-reaching.
Sounds like the transgender protections.
Well, no, it had nothing to do with transgender protections. This was
well, I mean, that happened recently when the transgender protections were pulled from. Right. It sounds similar to this story.
Well, it's actually worse than that, because Lambda was insisting on their bill. And Paul Koretz finally turned to me. He was, red in the face, very upset.
Yeah.
But he said, look, Mark, you know, I represent West Hollywood. This is an organization that makes millions of dollars. They spend millions of dollars on candidates. I need their endorsement. It's the wrong thing to do, but I'm going to withdraw your bill and put in theirs, which became law, and they gay people got eight benefits.
Eight rights.
What
due to
Lambda,
eight.
And after And after that bill passed, Peter, I got in the mail a fundraising letter from Lambda talking about the first domestic partnership bill in California, how they gave these 8 wonderful rights, and they were good things, hospital visitation and other things. They were useful things. They weren't all of them. They weren't even. And asking for money to support them in the fight for gay equality.
My God, how many times are we going to be used to raise money for the fundamentalist right? And now from Lambda Legal, Mark, I'm horrified at this story. I had no idea.
I determined that that day I would never give a penny to the Lambda Legal Defense Fund again. And I tell this story not to pick on gay civil rights organizations. Obviously not. I support gay civil rights. I do think that many of the people who work for these organizations do have terrific motivations. They give up high-paying jobs to help people. My point is this, that there comes a time when even progressive organizations, just like Take Back America, which I talked about in the last hour, when they stop caring about their goals and they start caring about money. And there are too many progressive organizations across the country that are a huge fundraising machine. And they make millions of dollars. I won't name them, but you know what they are. The people, they put up some good content perhaps on their blogs, and they make millions of dollars. When we've got, I got to go back to the horn, you and me and Bob Kincaid and John Fox and all of us and Guy James struggling to get the word out on a much more expensive operation than posting a website, which is a lot cheaper.
Yeah,
you know, you've got the,
exactly.
You got the calls and the computers and the telephone system.
Long,
and we get live content every day, and we're struggling just to get a few bucks to stay on the air. And these organizations, I fear that too many organizations begin as a good idea. MoveOn.org began as a good idea, but I feared that at the end of the day, they're much more about sustaining MoveOn.org than they are for their causes. Now, if I'm wrong, you know, MoveOn.org, give me a call, come on the air, and heck, you know, the horn could use $1 million, move on, because you've got it. But they're the ones that are spending, you know, $800,000 on a 30-second ad. To me, the story of Lambda Legal Defense Fund, the reason I tell this story on the air, is, one, I think it's the not-invented-here syndrome. The idea that it wasn't their idea, they can't take credit for it, they can't fundraise for it, they have to destroy it, even though they'd have to admit that my bill was better than theirs. Mine was 100%, theirs was half of 1%. But also, for people to be wary where they give their money, that they're giving it to a progressive organization that is actually giving out more than they take in. And I would ask any of you, when you donate to progressive organizations, ask them how much money, and they're required to tell you by law, how much they spend on fundraising versus how much they actually spend on progressive causes. I'm not telling you not to give at all. There's lots of good places to give. So I'll give one more pitch for the horn, but there are many other good places to give. The main thing is to make sure that they're not spending all their money on fundraising. And I'm finally done, Peter. I want to hear what you think of my story.
Well, first of all, I am very disturbed to hear this about Lambda Legal. I had always held them in the highest esteem, not realizing they too had succumbed to the beast of money. We've recently seen this similar behavior of blocking things from the HRC with their endorsement. That's, what's his name? Solomnes? What's his name? Step down.
Joe Solomnes.
Right, yeah. He was under much controversy, and now that he is out of the organization, he seems to be he seems to be speaking up, and in some ways not so complimentary about HRC. One wonders about all the details of him being
discharged. Well, I can tell you details about HRC.
Well, I would love to know them. There's a lot of stuff flying and hitting the fan.
Well, I'll tell you. Listen, you know, I used to work for Barney Frank. I was the gay rights guy on the Hill. I mean, you know, he is the premier gay congressman, and I handled all his gay rights stuff. So I saw a lot of stuff from the inside. And the Human Rights Campaign, I'm afraid, is often acting a lot like Lambda. And by the way, I don't think it's this, I don't mean to pick on gay rights organizations. I know that there are environmental organizations. There's all kinds of organizations out there that care more about their self-preservation than they do about doing good for their cause. But HRC would do things, for example, like support moderate Republicans. And they would do so they could argue they were a bipartisan organization, and they'd support people like Congresswoman Connie Morella of Maryland, or Senator Chafee of Rhode Island, moderate Republicans. But here's the problem with moderate Republicans. Senator Chafee of Rhode Island, and he was a moderate, he was even a liberal, what he would do is he would vote for the Republicans to run the Senate. That's the one vote he cast that mattered. And that would be enough to give Dick Cheney the tying vote. It is only because we replaced Chafee with a very good senator, Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island, that we are able to control the Senate. Now, admittedly, I got my problems with Harry Reid, but at least it's better than having Mitch McConnell in charge. And HRC would never make that argument. They would never seem to – they would understand it, but they wouldn't let people know that they should really just support Democrats, because even if they support a liberal Republican, they gave Republicans control over Congress. And, you know, with that control comes the fact that you can't have oversight committees. You can't have, you know, committees
exactly.
overseeing, subpoenaing well, whether White emails are law, White House emails are law.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so, but HRC started caring more about self-preservation, and I think with all these organizations, they have to be careful. I understand what they're saying. They have to stay alive. I mean, you know, the Horn has to ask for money, too. I hate asking for money. I don't ask for money anywhere on my website. I may have to finally, after 5 years, break down and put a donate page. I've avoided it for 5 years. Because I didn't want to. I've just been spending what I earned as a trial lawyer. But I understand that organizations have to sustain themselves. I get that. But at the end of the day, you have to be true to your principles. And one of the things that amazes me about what Scott from Sweden was saying 2 hours ago was that in Sweden, people look out for each other. And that's supposed to be a progressive value. And the sad
yes,
thing to
yes.
me is I see progressives taking on this conservative, individualistic, I'm all in it for myself type values that we decry against, even amongst ourselves.
Well, Mark, I have to say that I agree with you, and it is very disturbing, and one wonders how deep these things go. And I understand about self-perpetuating and that they need to exist, but I've always been very disturbed when any of the major organizations lift up a Republican in any way. You make a good point about the no committees to investigate. And your take on HRC, there's no doubt lots of dirt about that. In fact, the HRC actually went against, what was it, over 350 LGBT organizations who were screaming not to remove transgendered rights from the employment, the ENDA bill, and over 350.
I'll tell you what, we have to take a break soon, Peter, but if you want to talk about that with me, that may be one of the few things that actually I support. So we might have a good debate, you and me, on that issue. So tell you what, we got to take a break, but when we come back, Peter, let's discuss that specific issue, because I do understand the practicality in politics that sometimes you do have to compromise. What made me mad about Lambda was that at the very beginning they were negotiating against themselves. But tell you what, hang on, Peter. Let me also make sure our listeners have a chance to call in as well. Join in the discussion anywhere you want to go. 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Let's try to get this straight now. The Kurds in Iraq are supposed to be the one group that supports the U.S. occupation, and yet U.S. ally Turkey is now invading the Kurds in northern Iraq. Turkey's been bombing there for a couple weeks now, and last week it sent 10,000 troops over Iraq's border to go after members of the Kurdish Workers' Party. This is an illegal invasion of a sovereign country, which the U.S. is supposed to be protecting, but the Bush administration gave the Turks the green light for this offensive. Bush knows something about illegal invasions, so who is he to oppose this one? But if he thinks this will help keep Iraq together, he's got another thing coming. The Iraqi government, not surprisingly, has condemned the invasion, and even Kurds who aren't members of the PKK are outraged at the Turkish incursion. It's not unreasonable to suspect that many, if not most, Kurds will now turn against the U.S. occupation. And if that happens, the U.S. military will be exposed on all fronts, and it'll take more than a surge and more than a pause to control the chaos that Bush has wrought. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Hi. LOL. Well, AISI, it was NBD.
Kids are spending more and more time online, and even if you heard what they're typing, you probably wouldn't know what they're saying.
Some PPL, whatever. ISS.
They chat online in a language full of acronyms, and unless you use it every day, you won't understand it.
YIWGP.
You won't know what they're saying, or who they're saying it to. A lot of times, neither do they. Last year, 1 in 5 children was sexually solicited online. So here's an acronym for you. HDOP. Help Delete Online Predators. To protect your kids' online life and to get a full list of acronyms kids are using, call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It's the Week in Review. All topics are valid. Feel free to give a call. By the way, if you saw the Clinton-Obama debate last night, I'd love to know your perspective on it. I'll give you my 2 cents. The toll-free number, of course, 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. I have on with me a fellow co-host on the horn. This is kind of a leftover from us taking over the Guy James show. I got Peter Godbold. He, of course, is the host of Strictly Confidential, the only, I believe, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender talk show on the Internet in America. I don't know. Is there another one, Peter? I think you're alone.
Well,
you're
of course, there's Michelangelo, but he's on Sirius Satellite. I'm not aware of any others. There may very well be, but I'm not aware.
And he's not near as fabulous as you are. Anyway, Peter, of course, appears right after Bob Kincaid's show at 9 p.m., right?
That is
Eastern
right,
time?
From 9 till 11 p.m.
That's from 9 till 11 p.m. Eastern time. And I was talking, I wanted to keep Peter on for 2 reasons. One, because of his computer knowledge, and also because, heck, I wanted to dish about gay issues, gay political issues. Of course, I don't try to do gay style or fashion because I'm really bad at those things. But I do know something about politics. Before the break, Peter, you were saying, because I actually think I may find a part where I disagree with you. I get to argue with you, which is a rare... hey, I like to argue. I'm weird like that.
I think we're talking about the HRC and 350 groups objecting. I think that's where we're not in agreement.
The Employment Non-Discrimination Act has been around Congress for, probably more than a decade, probably 2 decades now. I remember that Al Gore made sure it was brought up when he was vice president, and he was all around to cast a deciding vote, and it lost by 1 vote. What the bill does is it says that you can't be fired because you're gay. If you can be fired if you do a bad job, but just like you can't fire someone for being black or for being Jewish or for being a woman or for being of a different national origin, you couldn't fire someone just for being gay. As I said, it narrowly lost in the 1990s. It's been around for a long time. This bill is interesting because it has a strong majority of support in both the House and the Senate. They even have more than the 60 votes. It's filibuster proof in the Senate. It's got a strong majority in the House, but we've never had Democrats in all three bodies, and you need that because the president will veto it. As I said, Clinton made a deal for, at the same time, in fact, they passed the awful Defense of Marriage Act. The deal was to bring the Employment Non-Discrimination Act at the same time, but that's the only way he could get it through a Republican Congress. And until we have Democrats in all three branches, it's very, very hard to get through. But there's a question over whether transgendered people should be included in it as well. Take it away, Peter, and explain from there.
Well, from the very beginning, the HRC assured transgender people that they would remain included and remain being supported. And then as it turned out, though, and this is the part that disturbs me, President Bush, if you can call him a president, clearly indicated that he would veto the legislation. So there was no possible way it was going to become law anyway. So since it was not going to possibly become law, why remove transgendered people? Why not just put it through just like it is? Why abandon them? Because it could have at least stood as a point of principle that we're standing together. And, of course, transgendered people are well trodden upon in this society, and I was disturbed by it. as were a lot of other LGBT groups. And Barney Frank and the HRC seemed to think that was fine to abandon them. And I don't know any other way to think about it. So I'm welcoming your input because I that's the way I feel.
Well, it's fair. Let me obviously be clear of my bias. You know, I worked for Barney Frank for almost 3 years, so I have my own prejudice. My bias is literally on the table. But I agree with him on this one. Here's what Barney Frank did. He didn't leave transgender out of the bill per se. What he did is he brought forth two bills. One bill included transgendered people, and the other one included, in other words, it was a bill for equal rights, not to be fired on the job for transgendered and for gay people. And the other one was simply for gay, lesbian, and bisexual people. And he put both forward, and there was a vote. And, of course, the one to protect gay people passed, and the one to protect gay and transgendered people failed. And so, as you say, a number of groups were upset. And listen, I believe that transgendered people should have equal rights. Let me be very, very clear on this.
Well,
I do too,
especially in the area of employment. Yes, and so many transgendered people are forced into being sex workers, et cetera, because they cannot keep their jobs when they're transitioning. I felt that was the last group we'd want to abandon.
And there are states, by the way, liberal states, that do include transgender rights. And Barney Frank is on record as supporting equal rights for transgendered people. But Barney Frank, and this may be where you and I disagree, Peter, he's a pragmatist. And he knew that you had the votes to protect gay lesbian rights. So let's face it. I mean, transgender people are a very small, not that that means they shouldn't have rights, but they're, you know, of all GLBT people, they're 1 in 100, 2 in 100. I don't know what it is, but clearly, you know, the great majority of gay people are not transgendered. And Barney said that we've always won civil rights piece by piece. You know, we got civil rights for, you know, we got the vote for blacks before we got the vote for women, before we got the real vote for blacks. We got the civil rights movement. It didn't include gay people to begin with. It's always been piece by piece, and that you don't take away the civil rights of a large number of people merely because everyone isn't included. His view was, let's pass what we can pass and then redouble our efforts to work hard to include transgendered people in the next time. And listen, I know from the Republicans, I know there was a Republican, a moderate Republican, in fact, one of the few Republicans that I have some respect for, but on this issue, he said to Barney Frank, and I heard him say it, you know, I understand where you are with ENDA, I get it, I understand why gay people should have equal rights in the workplace. He said, Barney, I'm just not there on transgender people yet. Maybe I should be a more enlightened person. I'm just not there yet. And what was he saying? He's still a bigot. Right. But he was, and that was the practicality Barney had to deal with.
Well, I can only offer you the fact that this country has a very poor record of going back and saving the ones we left behind. Example, there were so many LGBT folks who were active in the civil rights movement. In fact, Dr. Martin Luther King, one of his advisors was an LGBT person, a gay man, to be more specific. And yet, the black community, by and large, this is not altogether true. I've had many wonderful black guests who were working to help us. But by and large, we were left behind, and there was no turning back and looking back. Traditionally, groups that are left behind, nobody ever bothers, especially, and you see, that's the very point. Because they are such a tiny minority, because they are so small, they're so easily forgotten. We all know how the news cycle, you know, within weeks they will have no voice whatsoever. To me, the very argument you're using about them being a small group is the argument for them being included because, Mark, if for no other reason, it wasn't going to be a law anyway. Who cares whether it got through Congress? Who cares whether it got through the House? Bush was going to veto it. So just a matter of principle, I felt that they should be included. It was disturbing to me.
Well, I mean, you're right. Bush was going to veto it anyway. What I think you're saying, Peter, is that if we had a Democratic president who was willing to sign it, but we still didn't have majority support in Congress for transgendered rights, but we did have majority support in Congress for gay rights, then you would support splitting the difference. right?
It would leave a very bad taste in my mouth, Mark, but it would be something that I would be forced to consider. But because there was no chance of it ever becoming law, there's no reason to consider it.
Okay, I see your point. I do see your point. I mean, then it's a question of which you want to do. I thought actually Barney's compromise was a good one. He had two bills, and he supported both of them, and one passed.
I didn't know there were two bills. Yeah,
really?
I didn't realize. I thought that only the minus transgender bill was voted. I didn't realize that this is a detail I did not know.
Yes. Barney has always endorsed, sponsored, and heck, I wrote, I mean, listen, these bills are older than when I was in Congress. I can't take credit for them. The modifications I made were relatively small, but, you know, each time you introduce a new bill each year, you look over it and make a few changes. So I had my fingerprints on both of those bills, although I don't want to claim authorship because I can't. But we in our office consistently co-sponsored. Barney Frank, in fact, sent what are called Dear Colleague letters, which is where you send a letter to your fellow member of Congress and you say, dear colleague, you know, you really need to support this bill, et cetera, et cetera. We sent those bills out for both ENDA and for the ENDA that included transgendered. And Barney Frank tried very hard to get the support on both of the bills. And the sad truth is that we had something like, I don't know, 70 or 80% of congressional support for gay people now just to have equal rights, but we couldn't get transgendered to the 40% level. Republican.
Well, there was no single Republican that voted for Social Security either, but in this period of time, I've been listening to what you've said and also thinking about my remark that would be forced to consider it were the president not going to veto it. And I have done that and during this period of time, and I would still have to say that as a gay man and having faced this discrimination for 54 years, I could face it for a few more if it meant not leaving the transgendered folks behind. I have met, Mark, so many wonderful people on my show that are remarkable in every way for the things that they have come through. I personally have met them, and I could not leave them behind for any reason, whether we're going to get rights or not.
It's interesting, and Peter, is why. What it is about gay people that scares people and what it is about transgendered people that scares people. And apparently, well, it's not apparent, it's a fact, that transgendered people scare people a lot more than gay people do. And maybe it's the weirdness of the idea that someone could change their sex, or that a man wants to be a woman or a woman wants to be a man. But there's the same weirdness for straight people of, you know, why people are attracted to the same sex rather than another sex. Is it that they have – why do you think, Peter, that even many good liberals who support gay rights are still kind of freaked out by transgendered people?
I would have to say absolute ignorance. Do you know that my very first the first transgender person I had on this show, on the Strictly Confidential, I was so completely ignorant. I had no idea. I was speaking to a male-to-female transgendered person, and I assumed that all male-to-female transgender people, once they became female, would marry a man or become a female to be heterosexual. Well, this particular woman, she's in a lesbian relation, and apparently this is not unusual.
Not at all. One of the things I learned long ago by a good friend of mine.
It makes it more scary, Mark. It even makes it more scary to those people. But I'm just saying that the colors in the rainbow are very subtle. It just blew me away. I've learned a lot.
Let me explain something that I learned that just made it very clear to me exactly what was going on. This is one of my best friends in the world. In fact, I am the godfather to her son. She is a bisexual African-American woman that I met at Harvard. So there goes about 12 stereotypes out the window. She also speaks six languages fluently and is brilliant. But in any case, one of the things, and her focus, by the way, is the literature. I need to have her. I had her on my show like 4 years ago when I first started. She never even likes to come on the radio, and that she's brilliant. I want people to hear her, and she's – anyway, but she's much more self-effacing than immodest I. But in any case, she taught me this, and I've never forgotten it, that there are three scales, and none of which have to fall one with the other. Let me explain. You can be straight, attracted to people of the opposite sex, or gay, attracted to people of the same sex, or bisexual, somewhere in the middle. That's one scale, sexual orientation scale. Scale number two, you can be effeminate. You can have characteristics that seem feminine. You can be masculine, characteristics that make you seem, you know, more masculine, or somewhere in the middle. That's scale number two. Actually, just four. Scale number three is you can want to be a man, or you can want to be a woman, or somewhere in between. That's scale number three. And scale number four is the biological scale, whether you're born with, you know, male parts or female parts, or somewhere in between. And that's the only one that you really can't do anything about. But actually, none of them can you do much about, because you can have an extremely masculine-looking man who wants to be a man who is gay. You can have an extremely effeminate straight man who wants to be a woman. In other words, he wants to be a lesbian. He's an effeminate straight man who likes women. And so when he becomes a woman, it doesn't change his sexual orientation toward women. You can have a woman who is a lesbian. She is attracted to women, but she wants to be a man, and she's very effeminate. So you have an effeminate woman who is a lesbian who becomes an effeminate man who's attracted to... There's no necessary reason why any of these three have to correlate. And I think the American public, even I, had this weird notion that, you know, gay men must be effeminate and or want to be a woman. And that's, of course, not true at all. Most gay men don't want to be women. Most gay women don't want to be men. There are masculine gay men and feminine gay men and masculine straight men and feminine straight women, everything in between. And I think it's easier to think about this thing when you think about these three different scales and remember what they are. And what's interesting is that there's mistreatment and prejudice on all three scales. There's mistreatment against gay people. There's strong mistreatment against transgendered. There's also mistreatment against people who don't fit their gender stereotype. In other words, straight men who like women and want to stay a man, but who happen to be effeminate, are often mistreated in our society, as are masculine women, even if they're straight, and even if they want to stay being a woman. All three scales, there's prejudice against. And I just think my friend Cynthia, I got to give her credit for making me understand that these scales, none of them have to fall one for the other. And in fact, I met a good friend of hers at her wedding, who was the first female to male transgender I'd ever met, a woman who was becoming a man, and in fact looked so much like a guy that I thought he was kind of hot, actually, which he took as a great compliment. But she had been a lesbian with her partner, and she was becoming a man and still loved her partner, but her partner was having troubles because she was attracted to women, and so they had this very, you know, complex relationship. But these things are complex, and I think most people just don't want to think about it. If you're straight and you fit your gender stereotype and you want to stay the same gender, you don't even want to focus on it, because it makes you focus on yourself. If you allow that gay people should have equal rights, you might have to face the fact that, oh no, you once had a dream where you had a same sex, sexual dream about the same sex, and there's nothing wrong with that, but people don't want to focus on that in their own lives.
Mark, and I understand your analogy of the scales, and I understand the logic of it. I have always subscribed to the theory, though, that this, what we are in this country, is a war for the hearts and the minds of the populace. The heart and the mind of the church is at stake. The church is being hijacked. This is has been and always will be a battle of hearts and minds. And if we leave the transgendered behind, who is going to go back to help them? We are the only possible people who could bring them along with us. And I think
We will go back. I mean, you and I may disagree on this point, but we won't forget. I won't forget. You won't forget. I don't think most gay rights groups will forget. You know, when Jews marched for black civil rights in the 1960s, they did it because, you know, Jews had only had equal rights in America for a little bit longer than in Europe, but even in Europe just for the last 100 years. I mean, you understand, and then that's why blacks should go out and march for gay rights, and why gay people should march for transgender rights. Until every individual in this nation is allowed to live in peace. You know, that Beatles song, just, you know, let it be. Just leave us alone.
It's fairly clear that until everyone is free, everyone suffers. It's fairly clear.
You know, if we do a good job, hire us, promote us. If we do a lousy job, fire us. But don't look into, you know, who we sleep with or, you know, what we want to be. I mean, that's just, it's irrelevant to the job. And I think the argument has been made, and people get it for gay people. They don't get it for transgendered yet. But I, even though I disagree, I think that we have to take half a loaf. Even if, as I said, on marriage rights, I take half a loaf, it's better than none. I still think you have to keep fighting for full equality.
Well, I
will
agree,
never
Mark,
stop that battle.
When we include the future in this, we're looking at this one specific incident about the transgender bill. When it was included, it wasn't passed. There was such a huge outcry. Such a huge noise made over this in the gay community, by and large, who did not want to leave them behind. My hope is, and my prayer is that everything, that I trust that everything does work for the good, and that when the bill comes up again, and when there is a president who will sign it, then it is my sincere hope that it will include transgendered people.
Well, what it will take is, I think, a lot of education among just ordinary Americans, convincing ordinary Americans. A president could do a good job. I'd love to see a President Obama come out strongly for transgendered rights, maybe after he becomes president. But I think that really, I mean, Boys Don't Cry was one of the most powerful movies
for the
transgender community.
It did more good,
that one movie, I think, than a million bills. It just is a way to let people know that these are individuals. These are real human beings. They laugh.
Yes.
They cry. You can
Amazingly
go back.
Amazingly enough,
back.
It was in Blockbuster, easily available. It was not a hidden underground film at all.
No, you can go back to Shylock and Shakespeare, right? If you prick us, do we not bleed? If you hit us, do we not feel pain? Human beings are
Those
human
things.
Beings.
And I know you feel the same way, Mark. I know you do in your heart.
It's just that I do understand, and maybe, you know, that's part of the difference between being a moderate Democrat versus being a, I don't know, a lefter Democrat. I do sometimes.
Yes, I'm so far to the left. If I took one more step, I'd fall off the edge of the planet.
Yeah, no, I'm not that. I understand that sometimes you have to take half a loaf. I get that. I worked in Congress long enough to know that if you demand perfection, sometimes you get zero. I'm willing to take half a loaf, but that never means...
You've been in the trenches. This is important.
I have, but it never means I stop fighting for the other half. I just want to be clear on
that.
Just because I'm...
Mm-hmm.
Right. Just because I take half a loaf, I'm still fighting for my other half. And I think we have to keep fighting, and I think that the more transgender people who, you know, come out in their daily lives and so forth, just as gay people did, the further we all come along. And I think we'll get there. It's just going to take some more time.
Well,
I really do.
We have to get there. I don't want another generation to have to go what we... And certainly the generation that is alive today, the younger generation, has no idea what... Even I, at my tender young age of 54, has no idea what I went through. Pre-internet, total isolation. Nobody... The changes are startling, and I have every reason to be encouraged that we'll all...
I look at just the changes in my lifetime. When I came out, it was illegal to be gay. It was against the law. That was Bowers v. Hardwick. If you were gay in the state of Virginia, you go to jail. In fact, if you were straight...
I knew it in Texas. In Virginia, too? I didn't realize
this. Oh, it was 13 states across the country. And
in
fact, it was also illegal for straight people to have oral sex. I shall repeat. In 12 states in the United States, under Bowers v. Hardwick, until 2003, until 5 years ago... It was against the law in Virginia and 11 other states for a married couple, to have oral sex. Sodomy.
Well, of course, I agree with that law. I think it should be banned, yes.
Sodomy is defined as oral or anal sex, and it included married couples, and in the famous case of Bowers v. Hardwick, decided the wrong way by the infamous Lewis Powell. They had a straight couple sue as well and say they were afraid to have oral sex. This is a married straight couple. They were afraid to have oral sex because it was against the law in their state. And Lewis Powell responded by saying, "Yours is not this case. No one arrested you." In other words, he understood that the police were only arresting gay people for doing the same conduct that straight people do. And he was saying, "I'm not even going to take your case." It's one of the worst decisions until Bush v. Gore, in Supreme Court history, but it's something that, you know, I had to study in law school, Bowers v. Hardwick, and that's exactly what the law was. It was against all sodomy, and that included married couples. So Virginia is not for lovers. That's all I got to say.
Yes, it seems I recall that. There was a heart on the little bumper sticker at the time, wasn't there?
Yes,
hard.
And they're still ad campaigns. So, hey, Peter, listen, I appreciate you spending an hour on my show talking with
me. It's been delightful. It really has. I've just an amazing conversation, Mark. Who knew? we should not be in the same room.
No. We'll do this. We'll do this again. Listen, I mean, like I said, I deal with politics. I don't try to do fashion or culture. I leave that to you. You know, I leave fashion to you.
No, I don't dress well. My house doesn't have curtains and many windows, and they're going to take my card.
We are not doing well by the stereotype, are we?
No.
It's terrible. What we're showing is that gay people are just like ordinary human beings. We don't always fit the stereotype. We're just ruining everything.
You're ruining it, and I'm sorry, guys.
We are. As I said 2 hours ago, when you think of gay people, what do you think of? Politics and computers. That's
right.
Our expertise. So I don't know. Maybe we both need to go in for, you know, I used to joke that in West Hollywood that because I never saw Mommy Dearest or any Barbra Streisand film until years after I came out, and my gay friends basically corralled me and told me that I would lose my West Hollywood visa unless I saw, you know, one Joan Crawford, two Betty Davis, and one Barbra Streisand. I think was the minimum gay requirement.
I did get the movie, Gene. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. I appreciate you coming on the show. Coming up, of course, is Bob Kincaid out of the hills and hollows of West Virginia. I didn't get to any of the political topics I had today, Iraq pullout and all these things, but there's always tomorrow right here on the Inside Scoop. If you want to comment on any show, just go to RadioInsideScoop.com. This is Mark Levine signing off.